Let's get rolling here with a Monday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. Got a lot of news to get to, injuries that are affecting some of these races down the stretch. We also got to talk about the Spurs-Cavs games. The Spurs absolutely eviscerating the Cavs in San Antonio. Boston now leads the Eastern Conference, something that was unthinkable, as the Cavs are now 19-18 over their last 37 games. And we also want to debut a new feature somewhat along the lines of the four random questions. We're going to do four random players where Danny and I are each going to pick two players and discuss with each other just what we think of those. He's going to come up with two, I'm going to come up with two, and we're just going to say what we think of them, what their future is, how good they are now, wherever the conversation leads us in discussing them. Please don't pick like some guy in a 10-day, by the way, Danny. That would be that would be nice. We're sponsored today by Coca-Cola and Powerade, and also our friends at SeatGeek, where you can use the CatSpace code to get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Let's get to some news, Danny. Where do you want to start here? We've got a number of interesting things that have piled up since we last did this during the middle of the week last week.
I think I want to start with Paul Millsap. Millsap, because, you know, there was this weird thing where he kept on getting pulled out of a couple of games. So they'd say, oh, he's going to miss two or three games, and then it's going to be two or three games. And to say the phrase that gives everybody cold shivers down their spine, he met with Dr. James Andrews, and he had it's synovitis, right? That's the correct.
Yeah. It's basically synovitis, which Mike Dunleavy also was sidelined with for quite some time. It's just basically swelling in the knee, fluid buildup, I think. And he already has missed five games, all of which they have lost. He is now to be reevaluated after a further three games. And that's not, he's going to come back after another three games. He's just going to be reevaluated at that time. And the Hawks in dead free fall right now. They've lost eight straight, including at home to Brooklyn over the weekend, as Kent Bazemore has missed time with a sore knee, Tabo Cephalosha, late scratch with a sore groin. And the Hawks are 0-8 without Paul Millsap this season, already an offense that struggles, and then they don't really have the defense to kill people the way they do when Millsap is in. So while we have blanched at potentially paying his next contract, he still is an extremely valuable player. And I mean, if he's going to miss that much time, you know, they're basically at 500 right now. I said last week, oh, they're locked into their seating, and I kind of hadn't looked at what their last couple of games had been at that point. And then I looked down and like, oh shit, like they're like in the same really area now as the Bucks. The Bucks could move into fifth. I think they were in fifth for a time before losing to the Bulls. The Hawks might not make the playoffs. They're down to like 83%, and that doesn't know that Paul Millsap is going to miss these next three games. What does their schedule look like going forward here?
So you would say it's favorable, but at the same point, they've lost all these games recently. So they host the Suns on Tuesday. Then they have a back-to-back in Philadelphia on Wednesday. Then they go at Chicago Saturday, at Brooklyn Sunday, the spry, feisty Brooklyn Nets. And so you go through that part and you're like, okay, if Millsap misses that stretch, those are all at bare minimum winnable games. And some of those teams are actively not trying to win. But what gets to be a big problem beyond the possibility of losing a fair amount of those games is if it extends, because their last stretch is rough. Host the Celtics, then a back-to-back in Cleveland, then hosting Cleveland, then hosting the Hornets, and then last game of the year out against the Pacers, who could have a whole lot to play for themselves.
Yeah, and unlike these last two seasons, Cleveland's actually going to have something to play for now. They're going to be in a dogfight with the Celtics. They could even fall below the Wizards at this point, maybe too, if they really, you know, they're going to have to try probably, at least, you know, maybe their last couple of games they'll be locked in at that point. But, and then the Bulls too, another team that's behind them right now, losing to them would not be good. I believe they would lose the tiebreaker to the Bulls as well if they were to lose that game. And I mean, really, given the way some of these teams have played without Millsap, the only game you would say they're probably favored in the rest of the way would be at home against the Suns right now. And Millsap may come back, but as you mentioned, he's supposed to miss at least the next three, and then they have a back-to-back the next day against the Nets, and then they have 3 days off after that. So you'd have to imagine that it's probably more likely that he misses four games just because they have that three-day break after these four, and they could be in big trouble by that point. And who knows whether Millsap, when he comes back, is he going to be on a minutes limit? Like, what's the story going to be there? And their swoon really has thrown it. We hated their decision to take Millsap off the market, take the rest of their free agents off the market, and it certainly is looking like, you know, because they're like, oh, we're fourth in the East, you know, we're looking good right now. And those days are long gone.
It also sheds some some light on what they could look like post Millsap, because we don't know exactly, and they've been dealing with other injuries, but that's also true of another season. So if Millsap leaves of his own volition this summer, it's going to take some serious lifting, and they'll have some money if he leaves, but it's going to take some lifting for them to be a competitive team, because their core is going to be the same.
Yeah, I mean, they're only going to have even $30 million at that point, and not a ton of young talent on the roster either. Let's move on now here. But first, this from SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the original sponsor of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. My cat likes SeatGeek because he just tried to jump up on me as I was discussing them. And the reason he and I both like SeatGeek is because it's easier and it's a less expensive way to buy tickets. How is it easier? Well, a couple of ways. First off, they aggregate ticket sites together. So you don't have to go to 8 sites, get all worried that you don't have the best deal and now you have to go to a 9th. You can just trust that you're getting the best deal in front of you with SeatGeek. So that saves you a bunch of time. Then they also rank every ticket based on value. So if you're looking in section 101 and you've got one seat that's 2 rows back, but it's also $15 cheaper, and you got to kind of decide, they actually have this proprietary technology that ranks the tickets based on value. So you know you're getting the best deal in a certain section. So you just pick out the best deal. And now what used to be take you 20 minutes, take you 15 minutes, now it takes you 2 minutes if you use their app. And of course, if you get started with them, you can use our promo code CAPSPACE, which is all one word. We talk about it all the time in the program. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So whether it's sports, concerts, anything that there's tickets to, SeatGeek is a great place to look for tickets. Download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code CAPSPACE today. So let's get some quick hitters here injury-wise in addition to Millsap.
Kyle Korver he missed tonight's game against the Spurs, which we'll talk about. His foot just hasn't healed all the way. Amon Shumpert also missed this game.
Yeah, Korver had this issue with his foot, a strained foot tendon, I recall the initial diagnosis was. He missed like quite a few games, like 7 or 8 games, came back, and then he admitted to Ramona Shelburne today that it really had not fully healed. And you know, he is hopeful that he's just going to miss another few games, but it sounds like at least 3 games that he's going to be out. They definitely missed his shooting today when they couldn't make a 3, although he probably exacerbates their defensive problems as well. And then Shumpert, another guy who they rely on for defense. Now they've got J.R. Smith back in the starting lineup. That means that Kyrie Irving has to guard point guards, and you know that's going to be more defensive problems for them as well. And Kyrie struggled, of course, offensively today also, you know, maybe in part because of that greater defensive load. So, and then there's just, you got to get these guys integrated in the playoffs. I think there's still a concern for Ty Lue about, you know, who he's going to play. You know, can he go to these all offensive lineups? Do they have to play Shumpert just to get someone who can defend on the court? A lot of those are going to be some issues that these injuries are going to make more difficult. What do we have next?
We can go to the Kings shutting down Malachi Richardson, the suddenly resurgent Sacramento Kings, who won against Memphis in a game I don't think we're going to talk about. And since I brought up that game, Marc Gasol missed it as well. He's getting towards coming back, but he's not all the way there yet with a foot issue.
Yeah, Richardson had a severe hamstring injury right before the All-Star break, was supposed to come back in 4 to 6 weeks, but I think they've just come to the conclusion that why risk it, especially with that bad of a hamstring? That's something that is pretty easy to re-injure. Perhaps his progress had not been as good as hoped, and so they figure, hey, let's just, you know, get him ready for summer league, get him ready for next year. And then Gasol missed last night's game against the Warriors, also missed this one against the Kings, both of which they lost. And you're obviously losing to the allegedly tanking Kings, not great for Memphis, especially because they had a last second loss and OKC had a last second win, scoring the last 14 points of the game against Dallas to come back from 13 down with under 4 minutes remaining, thanks to Russell Westbrook. And so now the Thunder looking a lot better potentially for the 6th seed. Where are the odds at on that now with those two teams?
I don't know that I can get seed specific odds, but 538 right now has the Thunder projected to win 47 games and the Grizzlies to win 45.
Yeah, so that's pretty significant, especially because the Thunder just have been playing better lately. And for Gasol, this is not, at least the good news is, this is not the foot that he had the fracture in last year. So hopefully he can come back. Maybe maybe after this back-to-back. In Detroit, a team that has been in absolute free fall of late, Reggie Jackson actually just missed this game against the Knicks, which was a desultory blowout loss for Detroit, just for rest, which was interesting after Stan Van Gundy had kind of excoriated everybody for resting players. And then he rests Reggie Jackson. I don't know whether that was a disciplinary thing, a get your head together, he's having soreness, who knows, maybe just kind of shake things up a little bit. Stan is kind of prone to do that when things aren't going particularly well, as they aren't for the Pistons, but it clearly, you know, going to Ish Smith and Beno Udrich didn't really work either. So that does bear monitoring, though, as Reggie has been known as a difficult personality. He's played poorly. Stan's kind of been yanking his minutes around now. So we'll keep an eye on that one. John Henson with the Bucks, he's already missed two games. He's out another week with a sprained left thumb. With Thon Maker getting the ever shorter Keith Bogan start, Greg Monroe plays a lot, but then Kidd, just for whatever reason, doesn't really like to play Monroe that many minutes. So Spencer Hawes has been getting more time now with the Bucks, and I guess the upside of that is maybe he'll play well enough that he'll actually opt out of that contract and give the Bucks some more cap space. But Hawes, not a particularly effective player, though, you know, they might be able to use that shooting element that he provides at center. If he just actually stood out there and all he did was shoot threes, he could be valuable. But of course, he tries to like do all this stuff inside offensively, and then Hawes, not a quality defensive player either. What else we got here?
Which dysfunctional franchise in the Pacific do you want to go to, Lakers or Kings?
Yeah, this is big news for the Lakers. It was huge news back when Jim Buss attempted a palace coup to kind of sneak under Jeannie Buss's nose and have her removed from the board of directors. She sued him to prevent that from happening. He then withdrew those attempts. And now we talked about how if I were in Jim Buss's position, I might as well just, you know, go to trial, because what Jeannie Buss was demanding was so draconian. I mean, not really draconian, because it's probably what the trust says you can do, but basically to get him out of there. But he is now completely acquiesced. The trial is going to be vacated, and he is now off the board, replaced by another Buss sibling, Janie Buss. And now with Janie, and the remaining Johnny Buss still on there, he was part of Jim's faction. Jeannie's faction clearly controls the franchise. Jeannie Buss to be on the board and also a trustee of the trust that owns the Lakers. There's three of those trustees, and Jeannie and Janie are two of them now. She had to sign something. Basically, she would support Jeannie Buss as the controlling owner going forward. So it appears the drama is resolved. Jeannie Buss won, and Jim Buss, much as the Lakers did during his tenure, lost.
Then today's fascinating news, originally reported by Woj, was that the Kings... Well,
so I think it was actually
ESPN. Stein had it. Yes, that's right.
First said that the Kings had requested to talk to Sam Hinkie. Sam is living in Northern California right now, and he is still under contract with a non-compete with the Sixers until the end of this year. So they asked for permission to the Sixers to talk to them, to talk to Hinkie. And then after that news came out, which Woj also said, basically Rana Dive has been searching for an executive to place over Vlade Divac. He's looking to move him into a figurehead role via tweet. The Kings released a rather interesting statement through Sam Amick.
And I quote, "The Kings are not hiring Sam Hinkie and have no plans to bring in anyone above Vlade," end quote.
And then Woj, this might be my favorite tweet that he's ever had, actually.
I think it's my favorite tweet anyone's ever had.
Kings, colon, quote, "The Kings are not hiring Sam Hinkie and have no plans to bring in anyone above Vlade," close quote. Parentheses, "They're searching for someone above Vlade."
It's great if you read it in Ron Howard's narrator voice from Arrested Development, because that's exactly what it is.
Oh, man. And for Hinkie, it's got to be a tough show. Like, I mean, the Kings, they also said they weren't going to fire George Karl. You know, there's a lot of snarky tweets about times when this Kings regime has just completely gone back on what they're saying. I mean, Vlade Divac said he wasn't going to be trading DeMarcus Cousins 2 weeks before he got traded. And it's interesting, this would be full circle for Vlade, because the initial thought was that Vlade was hired in this figurehead role that they're now talking about him going back into, and probably the role he frankly should have been in all along, because he was not qualified to be a GM when he started, and probably still isn't. So, but for Hinkie, I mean, this is, as we've noted, probably the team with the worst long-term future other than the Brooklyn Nets in the league. And part of that doing was Hinkie fleecing this very same team out of swap swap rights this year, which actually could be relevant. Looks like the Kings are actually going to finish below the Sixers. Although actually the Kings winning these last two might have changed that. But and then also bilking them out of their 2019 pick unprotected for the privilege of $13 million in salary of Carl Landry, Jason Thompson, and a little bit more than that in Stauskas, but he probably wasn't dead salary at the time.
No, he wasn't. He got his option year picked up. Yeah, it would be super strange to see it happen where the fleece-er joins up with the fleecey. Like, generally, that's not... It's a strange kind of circle of life thing, but I also think... I hope that Hinkie gets a better offer than that, because what part of what I've liked so much about, and you have to have ownership buy-in, of course, which is a big problem with Vivek.
Would you rather go to Orlando, or would you rather go to Sacramento? It's looking like Orlando is going to have an opening as well this offseason. If you were just a GM candidate, would you rather go to Orlando, or would you rather go to Sacramento?
Orlando in a heartbeat for two reasons. One, I think that there's a better chance that their ownership is together than Vivek, just with all the leaks and everything else that's going on there. And second, and this is very, very important, I've wanted Hinkie his next job, assuming ownership was willing to buy into a teardown, not that that's the only thing he's good at, he could do something else, on a team that was a desirable free agent destination, because having cap space, which is something that the Sixers maximize so well, is even more valuable if you are the Lakers or the Knicks or a team like that. And so while those major market teams look like they're pretty settled, Orlando has gotten high-end free agents in the past, whereas Sacramento really has not.
Yeah, like, you know, Jeff Green or DJ Augustin, for example. I'm kidding. But yeah, and I think, you know, Orlando actually made it to the finals within living memory here, unlike the Kings. And I will say this, if Hinkie was thinking about it, this fiasco and then them releasing this statement that they're never going to hire him can't be particularly encouraging. And you know, maybe he'll feel like, hey, you know, number one, I got to make a living. Number two, there aren't that many of these GM jobs. But, you know, at some point, you know, maybe he would just be happier being the number two guy in a good organization and making a living that way instead of just dealing with everything you have to deal with in Sacramento. But and then there's also the issue that Dave Yeager was just hired on a pretty long, high value contract. And Yeager does not strike me as a Hinkie type of guy. Yeager clashed with a more an organization that went in a more analytically focused direction in Memphis. So this would just be a mistake of the Michael Malone or repeat of the Michael Malone D'Alessandro issues. But I mean, so, and that's going to be an issue no matter who the Kings are going to bring in. Big surprise, more dysfunction. And the biggest thing too is that there was, I shouldn't say the biggest thing, but Woj also said that not only minority owners, which we've known for a long time, but also the NBA was trying to get Ron Adibe to bring in someone a little bit more professional, was the word that Woj used.
We can transition from that to a player who was born and raised in Sacramento, Ryan Anderson. He's on the Rockets. He has an ankle sprain and he's going to be out 2 weeks, which isn't huge for the Rockets seeding, but could affect some kind of ancillary stuff. And you need to, of course, have him right for the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, out 2 weeks. I mean, that's getting there pretty close. And it depends. It looks like the Rockets now, if things continue, will be looking at facing the Thunder. That's not a joke of a series. Memphis wouldn't be either. But that's a concern. Anderson, I think, is his ability to shoot those really deep three-pointers and be guarded by the four is pretty essential to their offense. They're not nearly as intimidating without him offensively. They'll be better defensively without him. But nonetheless, I mean, they don't really have a ton of guys on this team who can play power forward either. I mean, Sam Decker is really even their only kind of combo forward. Ariza is probably a little bit too thin, and he's supposed to be their primary wing stopper. And so then you've got James Harden guarding the other team's power forward, which isn't necessarily ideal either. So they're going to need Anderson to get back. And, you know, fortunately for them, I mean, he's not like, you know, an ankle sprain. His game is not based on like exploding to the rim necessarily, but it can affect pretty much anyone. Going to a less successful 2016 offseason signing, Joakim Noah, with the cherry on top of what has been a bad season, I guess we shall say. I had a more colorful phrase that I decided to bite off instead. But he now is going to be suspended 20 games. Oh, and lo and behold, he suddenly thinks he might be healthy enough to play. So he could start the clock on that suspension, even though he was basically supposed to be out the rest of the year.
And it gets into a fascinating kind of issue that I've been thinking about a little bit in a different context, which is that the issue with the supplement and with the, you know, with the suspension is different if it had happened entirely under the new collective bargaining agreement. And so the point I wanted to get in, we'll get in the nitty gritty with it in a second, is if the owners and players agreed that there was a drug regime or something like that, that was superior to the one that they currently have, they could have just implemented that right away. They're allowed to do that through collective bargaining. They could just implement certain parts of the CBA and then have this salary cap and whatever else they want to do in the future. If they think that drug and administration regime is better in the new CBA, just do it now. It's ludicrous.
You know, this substance, which is called LGD-2033, a selective androgen receptor modulator, and I've done a little bit of reading on this. Essentially, it's supposed to provide steroid-like effects without the negative side effects, which is still in clinical trials. So it's not really like a legal substance, obviously, and you know, to think it makes sense that it's banned. The other thing that's interesting, you know, he of course claimed that he took some supplement, you know, the typical likely bullshit excuse. And the new CBA at least is going to allow players to make some kind of a defense that they, you know, unknowingly ingested something. It's not strict liability the way a lot of other things are. As Larry Kuhn called it on the show a little bit ago, it's the, oh, I thought I was just eating a brownie defense. which really made me laugh. But you know, for Noah, the Knicks are not going to be able to void his contract over this or anything, but and they're going to try to let him be suspended for less games next year. He supposedly is hopeful that he can be cleared as of Wednesday from that knee surgery, which is supposed to be a minor knee surgery, 4 to 6 weeks initially, and then they ruled him out for the year. So, you know, they have like 10 games left, so he'd have to serve another 10 next year. It'll also, the new dollar loss from suspensions next year is actually lower on a per game basis, but because this is a lost year, might as well activate him and let the suspension start. And the league's pretty diligent about that. We had the same issue with Blake Griffin last year. I mean, anything else to add on this Noah thing? I mean, you know, it's kind of not that much of a surprise because he is getting older and he's been injured a lot. And, you know, at least Knicks fans can say that he isn't just like resting on his laurels and like, you know, is like trying to earn his paycheck, even if he's doing it illegally. Maybe that's a slight silver lining.
And maybe the little cloud that goes on it is the idea that for the front offices that might have been foolhardy enough to try to acquire him, you know, like there's always someone that kind of the idea, this might give those front offices pause.
Yeah, so if Noah misses 10 games this year and 10 games next year, $2.77 million will be the total cost for him. What else have we not gotten to yet here?
Ankle sprain at Palooza continues with J.J. Redick and Al Jefferson. Jefferson's looks worse. He's in a walking boot, and I don't think either one of them has a specific timetable yet.
Yeah, that Jefferson one was pretty bad. Miles Turner actually said during the game, which a courtside reporter, I think it was Nate Taylor with the Indy Star, said like he thought he heard something snap. X-rays were negative though, but Jefferson, not a guy who's been a particularly fast healer over the course of his career, and they really need him, frankly, because, you know, it's Lavoy Allen, but Kevin Serafin has been completely ineffective. They even had to go to Rakeem Christmas a little bit at times, and, you know, he's probably had like a couple of moments, but has not looked like an NBA player in his D-League time. So the Pacers' bad depth gets even worse. And, you know, I think they're playing well enough that they're probably not in danger of falling out of the playoffs, where you've basically now got five teams for four slots if we're going to give up on Detroit at this point. But not good. And then Redick actually stepped on the ball in the game over the weekend and probably will miss their next game, but it's not believed to be too serious. But Redick has had years where he's struggled with his health going into the playoffs, and at least the Clips, that's the one thing they could say, is at least they're healthy so far. So it sounds like Redick will be able to get back though before the season begins, but they are of course locked into that battle with the Jazz for home court in the 4-5 series.
We can go to DeMarcus Cousins, where he missed both games of their back-to-back, and then so where they just demolished the Nuggets in that shocking game that kind of looks like it took Denver out of playoff, you know, not out of contention, but out of likelihood. And then they
damn well better beat Portland tomorrow, and we're going to do a gamer probably both tomorrow and Wednesday, so we'll have a wrap of that game on tomorrow's show. But I mean, that's just going to be a massive game, the Nurkic Bowl, the Nurkic and Plumlee Bowl, I guess. But Denver better win that. Otherwise, Portland's going to be sitting really pretty, as I think Portland will also have the tiebreaker at that point. You remember also that game very early in the year when Denver, I think, was, you know, was up by like 10 points with like 2 minutes left or something. And Dame Lillard went absolutely crazy and got into overtime and won them that game, too.
That was one of my favorite games of the first month of the year.
So the Pels did lose to the Jazz today. They are now 5 games out of the playoffs with 8 to play. They are done. They've been done. They've had some flashes of playing better, but... And the AD at center thing has worked pretty well. I mean, they always had to acquire Cousins, but there is something about AD at center, and you know they've been playing like a Jinso a little bit, but it's mostly been Davis at center when he's been in with Cousins out. Damari Carroll has missed some time recently with a back injury. They've actually been starting PJ Tucker at the 3. That did not prevent them from destroying the Magic today, even with, of course, Kyle Lowry out. Interesting story from Josh Robbins with Serge Ibaka returning, Terrence Ross also playing against his old team, in which basically Vucevic, Fournier, pretty much everyone involved on the Magic said, yeah, you know, it probably wasn't that good of a decision to go with so many bigs all at once. And, you know, Aaron Gordon is really a 4. He's much better that way, is basically what Fournier said. Vucevic was like, yeah, you know, it was too hard with 2 bigs to like guard all these small teams. Like in the new NBA, things aren't going that way. Ibaka himself on his return said, hey, I talked to Frank Vogel about wanting to play center, but we already had too many centers, so we couldn't get away with that politically. So, you know, we knew it. The Orlando players knew it. And Orlando's management really seemed to be the only ones who realized that, you know, going this big wasn't going to work out too well.
Yeah. Have we heard anything specific on Gordon Hayward yet? I know there was a quad contusion issue, but he still hasn't come back yet, right?
Yeah, he missed tonight's game against the Pels, which the Jazz won. It is not believed to be serious, though. He did have to take him out of that Clippers loss on Saturday. So I think he should be back relatively soon. But I think for the Jazz, it's going to be interesting how hard do they want to push for home court. They also have Derek Favors, who's been shooting around, but still has no type of indication that he's going to be back anytime soon. How hard do they want to push for home court, which I think will be very important for them. But, you know, they also have to get these guys healthy. And the Clippers have an easier schedule down the stretch as well. One thing I wanted to talk about with you, Devin Booker, of course, had that 70-point game over the weekend. What did you think? And you know, they were down by 20 the whole game. And that's got to be the most points ever scored in a loss, too, right? I would think so. But
at least in a regulation game. But probably,
yeah,
anyway.
I mean, that's like, you know, I think the only players who have scored more were Wilt, Kobe, David Thompson, and David Robinson. I think are the only ones, and Elgin Baylor, are the only ones who have scored more in a game now than Devin Booker. Is pretty crazy. But, you know, he had 55 points with like 2 minutes left in the game. And then, you know, he was getting fouled a lot in scoring, but Earl Watson was fouling intentionally, taking timeouts to get him to 70 points. What did you think of that?
I didn't love it, but at the same point, I don't think that there's a way that you can outlaw it. So it's kind of taboo in that way, but the way that you can react to it is by making sure that he's not the one who gets it. So you can foul other guys, you could go into other sorts of circumstances. And from what I can tell, I haven't rewatched, I want to do that at some point, rewatch though at least the fourth quarter, probably the whole second half of that game. But Boston kind of, they didn't do their part. If they really didn't want him to score 70 points, they could have done a few more things.
But I mean, why would they pervert the game even further? And there was a little spat, you know, that they posted an Instagram, everyone happy in the locker room about Devin Booker, and Earl Watson was like, hey, if you have a problem with me doing that, we want our kids to be great. And, you know, Earl definitely earned some points in what's been a lost, terrible season for the Suns. You know, he is someone who his probably greatest asset as a coach is that he has been popular with his players. And so then Jay Crowder was like, you know, commented on, I think, Devin Booker's Instagram saying, yeah, I've never seen a losing locker room so happy. And then Booker fired back with, yeah, you can't guard me, Jay. So that was a joke. I mean, I like it. I think, you know what, like, it's fun. Why not just do it if it leads to more animosity? Like all these like unwritten rules, like that's one of the things that's like so sorry about baseball, is this like unwritten rules of the game. Like, you know what, like, it's fun, it's a competition, like try to do cool stuff. And if the other team doesn't like it, well, then they can stop you from doing it, you know? And that's what Earl Watson said. He was like, do something about it.
I agree with all of that. And I think that the unwritten rule issue, particularly in baseball, is overblown. I am interested in whether the NBA would actually have a kind of fan satisfaction argument here with the idea that they've always been all, you know, the harumph about Hacker and all that kind of stuff. Doing Hacker without the intention of using it to try to win the game is a somewhat novel thing. You know, it's kind of the equivalent of doing it out of spite, which doesn't really happen very much. And I don't think there's a way that you can rectify that. You know, there are always these issues with rules or laws in general where can you take out the quote unquote bad conduct while allowing all of the quote unquote good conduct. So there might not be a way to fix it, but there actually might be an argument there because it definitely slowed the hell out of that game.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But you know what? People can remember that he got 70 points in a loss. I mean, just to do that at 20 years old, obviously, is incredible. Yeah. And you know, I don't want to take away anything from that. I didn't watch the game live, so I don't have as many thoughts on just, you know, that performance of itself. And it's a couple days old. So
15 and 60 at some point.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's, I mean,
what
that's
else are we going to talk about?
Quickly here, Joel Embiid, he did in fact have a meniscectomy rather than a repair, as we speculated would probably be the case. So sounds like his timetable is going to be, you know, the 6 to 8 weeks type of thing. Glenn Robinson III suffered a calf injury for the Pacers. He is going to be out at least 2 weeks, and he was getting some minutes for them off the bench, exacerbating their issues at backup wing and backup power forward, where he had played a little bit as well. And I thought this was interesting too. Albert Random tweeted this out from the website Spot TV, where he apparently has a subscription. National TV ad spending for the NBA in last year's regular season was $488 million in the regular season and $1 billion basically in the playoffs. So $1.5 billion total. Last year, the national TV deals were very profitable for the networks. They only paid $1 billion. So they basically made $500 million. And then the new deals now are going to pay out $2.1 billion. You'd imagine that the ad rates aren't going to go up that much. So there's a $600,000 shortfall. Remember that the deals are going up. Now,
$600 million.
Keep in mind, yeah, thank you. Yeah, yeah. Keep in mind that ESPN gets a bunch of money for, you know, for just subscriber fees, $7 a month for ESPN for most places. And TNT has, I think, the second highest affiliate fees in cable. So with that being the case, they have, part of it is just that they can justify those high fees by paying these amounts. And then you also get the fact that you can, it provides a lead in for other programming, like a Sports Center after the game or before the game, the pregame show, just, hey, don't forget to watch baseball this Sunday night, you know, that those kind of benefits as well. And just the fact that you have the NBA means that, hey, you know, you're leaving the TV on ESPN at the bar for the next 3 hours after the NBA game is over because you're too lazy to change it, that kind of stuff. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, the next TV deal is a long way away of whether these partners actually think that it would be worth it or not, based on what some of these, and then also what effect that, say, cord cutting is having, where less people are watching, less people are subscribing as well, which of course is an issue for ESPN and TNT. Wow, that was a lot of, that might be our longest news segment
ever. Well, I actually want to say one more thing, and it's the idea that this could have long-term effects in terms of the way the salary cap goes, because there has been this long-going trend of, you know, things moving up steadily. And while there are new forms of revenue, including jersey ad sales and a few other things, it's very possible that 5 to 10 years from now, we're looking at a league that salaries might be going up, but at a slower rate than we've gotten used to, not even including the huge spike the last 2 years.
And of course, local TV deals, which come up more regularly, are a microcosm of that as well. Oh, we do have one more thing. We had mentioned before that Ty Lawson had a hearing on March 22nd. He denied that he violated his probation, and he also said that he would agree to have his vehicle equipped with an interlock device that tests him for alcohol consumption whenever he drives, so he can prove that he's not drinking. And no resolution yet in that case, but you know, if the court finds that he's violated his probation and he has to spend some time in jail, that's not going to help his free agent value. And he's actually, just based on his play this year, has actually been good enough to merit, you know, a lot better than a 1 year minimum contract, which is what he got last year.
Yeah, it'll be, the negotiations for a lot of these non-premium point guards are going to be really interesting this year, because there is a demand for those players and the supply of money could be variable.
All right, you want to start with your first random player after this quick break? The answer is yes, you do. But because that was a terrible lead-in, we will just go to this message right now from Coca-Cola and Powerade. So you've got some buddies coming over for NCAA March Madness. The Final Four is this weekend. Well, it would be terrible if your friends get thirsty and you have nothing to give them. So do yourself a favor, get ready for tip-off by picking up a 6-pack of Coca-Cola and an 8-pack of Powerade at Walmart. You can also pick up some great stats and pointers at the website coke.com/alwaysready. You'll have some March Madness knowledge to drop. If things get quiet, say your team is getting blown out and the room fills up with awkward silence, you can tell them exactly why your team is getting blown out. Either way, it's swimming by Walmart. You can get everything you need to watch the game with friends and family. Enjoy the dance, gear up to watch all the games, Coca-Cola and Powerade from Walmart, and get in on the March Madness action by visiting coke.com/alwaysready. That's coke.com/alwaysready. NCAA and March Madness are trademarks of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. All right, who's your first guy?
Somebody that we watched recently and is a free agent this summer, Jermichael Green.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd had a couple of conversations with executives about him and what he might get. He actually played very well in that game against the Warriors, just kind of finding space, picking up garbage around the rim, hitting some short mid-rangers, picking up loose balls. I have been a little bit disappointed with just his volume on three-pointers. Maybe he just hasn't been asked to spot up that much, but he's hasn't really taken very many threes, right? I'm going to look up how many he's taken right now. I think of him as a guy who you're probably not, maybe he's like a more athletic version of Anthony Tolliver. Maybe he can kind of be that guy, that type of a guy, maybe a better defender. So someone who isn't going to contribute a ton in the box score, but spaces the floor well enough. And I think most importantly, can switch defensively 1 through 4, maybe even 1 through 5 with some amount of credibility. How are you feeling about his future at this point? I mean, he's already 27 too. I guess that's another thing to consider.
I feel like he can be a capable starter in the league, but being 27 means that other than just getting more comfortable with his role, which is certainly possible, maybe even likely, just considering he went from being a spot starter playing 20 minutes a game to being a basically full-time starter playing about 28, that I could see him being that way. But really, this is his, you know, you're presumably going to get your entire prime for his contract. So I'm not as interested in the Grizzlies' willingness to pay him, though he could cut into the possibility of luxury tax and all that sort of stuff. I'm more interested in what other teams really need a starting caliber, but not above average power forward, which is probably where he's going to settle in.
I mean, he's playing 28 minutes a game, shooting 38% on threes, though only 131 attempts this year, which is the disappointing part, but and really has made himself into a three-point shooter. Was not that when he first was trying to scrap on to a place in the league. And he also he's been athletic, moving his feet. We haven't seen quite as much from him. It's just the nuclear athleticism that he had maybe like 2 or 3 years ago when he first really kind of wowed me as he was breaking in. But I think, you know, something along the lines of like, you know, $10 million a year for 3 years, something like that would be like pretty realistic for him, perhaps. All right. So is it my turn?
Sure.
Kelly Oubre.
Oh, man. So Oubre, you know, he had that really nice stretch earlier in the year where he was able to hold his own a little bit better defensively than I expected, played some power forward. But what I've been concerned by with him overall, and you see little moments, is just where he fits in, you know, if he can grow his game a little bit, which he's going to have to, and he's young enough where that's certainly possible, with how he fits in if you wanted him as a starter on a successful team. I don't exactly understand his fit, because like Porter is if Porter shoots as well as he has this year, obviously that's a whole different kettle of fish. But Oubre looks to me at this point like more of a super sub than a long-term starter, even a fringy one.
Oubre is only 21.
Yeah.
I've been impressed by his defense. I think he may actually be their best perimeter defender at this point, unless John Wall is really engaged. You know, he's had moments where he's actually guarded the other team's point guard effectively. He has a 7'2 wingspan. The biggest concern is his three-point shooting. 47 out of 163 on the season. That's 29%, trending downward of late. Only 32% last year. I was hopeful that making a spot three-pointer was something that he could do effectively. He does get out in transition, can straight line drive, but only to his left, only finishes left. Hasn't shown quite the level of athleticism finishing at the rim that I hope for. I think he might just be a little bit worn down by this point in the season. Maybe he hasn't watching him at like the Hoop Summit a few years ago, he had some like really just like nuclear dunks. We haven't necessarily seen that from him. But I think the fact that he's been able to contribute defensively is encouraging, because his reputation was as kind of a spacey guy, not really that hard of a worker. And the fact that he's been able to carve out a little bit of a role in that, after they made the Bogdanović trade, he lost his spot in the rotation, and now it seems to have won it back of late, and I think has helped their defense. I think he's on track. You know, the shooting's a little worrisome, hasn't shown the offensive flashes. I don't think that he's going to be much more of, you know, I mean, maybe he could just be like the guy that he replaced in Washington, Trevor Ariza. Maybe he could be kind of similar to him. I think that would be a nice outcome for him. I'm not going to foreclose on him being a starter, but he's definitely an NBA player. And with the 15th pick, you know, that's especially given that he was drafted 1 year out of college, you know, for him to be in the rotation and contributing at any kind of a level right now on a good team, I feel happy about that if I'm Washington right now.
Absolutely. It's accomplishment, and to do that in a role, even just defensively, that is hard to find, is incredibly valuable. And Washington is going to need wings in the worst way, especially if they're going to be very limited in terms of the money that they have to spend. I mean, maybe they'll spend on Bogdanović, we'll have to see. But Oubre is a wonderful piece to have in the near term. And then, you know, when he eventually gets paid, then we have a different discussion. But that time is not now. Are you ready for your second one?
Yes.
D'Angelo Russell.
Well, you really love these left-handed dudes. Well, I guess I had the second one who can't go right. I've never been as high on Russell as anyone, even in the draft, because I felt that he had so many boxes that he needed to check to become a great player. And we saw the flashes from him with his shooting ability and with his ability to pass in the pick and roll. That passing, while he does throw some spectacular passes on occasion, just has not been that much of a weapon. He just doesn't set his teammates up that much, even when he's been playing point guard. I think part of the reason for that is just that maybe he's more prone to the spectacular pass than the good fundamental one that just sets guys up. Part of it is just they haven't had the shooting or the spacing to let him operate. And then another part of that is that he's very switchable. He's not able to get to the rim and finish. He doesn't get to the foul line. And he's not dynamic enough with the ball in his hands to force two guys on the ball so that he can then make those passes. And his shooting off the dribble has looked pretty ugly as well. That's part of why they've been trying him at shooting guard off the ball, coming off of screens a little bit more as well. And then, of course, we know that his defense has been really bad and his athleticism is really bad. He has not improved his finishing hardly at all. He doesn't seem to have improved his athleticism much at all either. As of right now, despite his great size at 6'5 for the point guard position, he has a total of 4 dunks in his NBA career, 2 last year and 2 this year.
That ties in with something that I wanted to say, which is one of my big concerns with him is that this year...
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm just looking at his Basketball Reference. Danny LaRue of Real GM sponsors this page. D'Angelo Russell's page.
I do.
That's a solid move, actually. You're probably getting more bang for your buck there with Laker fan.
That was part of the idea. And so what concerns me about Russell, there are a couple different things. One is something you got into, the idea of his ability to punish when other teams either give attention to other players or handle a switch. That's been a concern. But then the other part of it is looking at the rim. So last year, he made 58.6% of his shots 0 to 3 feet restricted area. That has actually dropped to 56. So it's not a huge drop, but a drop. Yeah, but
I know where you're going here too, because even more worrisome is he took 19% of his shots to the rim last year, and it's down to 14% this year in a system that should have a lot more opportunities to get to the basket and have spacing around him.
And that's exactly where I'm going with it, is the idea that you have to be able to make opponents pay in multiple different ways. And he is a good passer, and I also don't see the floor general in him. And he is very young still. I believe he's still 20, and he's 21 now. Maybe he turned 21 recently. Yes, he did. He turned 21 in February. But that idea that you see a lot of times in younger guards, even if they can't put everything together right away, of like intuitively, like they're giving the ball to their teammate in the right place, and maybe sometimes the pass gets stolen, maybe sometimes it's too slow. He can do that in transition, but I don't see it enough from him in the half court to say, oh, he'll figure that part of it out at least. And I think back to John Wall, and while that's not a fair comparison athletically and for a lot of other reasons, I saw that more from Wall his second year than I have from Russell in either his first or second year.
Yeah, I mean, Wall has always been a brilliant passer, and we just haven't seen it enough from Russell for whatever reason. And I mean, really, given the way his game is evolving, for him to be really, like, you know, a quality starter, you know, above average starter, he's going to need to shoot like very high 30s, low 40s on threes with a very high volume. I think that's really the only way I see him right now, because I don't see him being able to get to the foul line. That's the only way he's going to be able to be efficient and then, you know, force guys to double team him off the pick and roll, and then maybe he can make some passes. And the other concern too is these knee injuries that he's had that I think have hampered him a little bit. That's another concern.
I am at the point right now, and I would believe that their front office is there too, their new front office, that he has not been so good that he would preclude you from drafting somebody to fill his niche or his position, however you want to define that. And considering this class is pretty loaded at point guard, we don't know exactly where the Lakers pick is going to fall, much less even if they get to keep it. But the prospect of that being the best player on the board and being the proper guy to take, while this shouldn't concern them, it starts to create some very real problems, because Russell is a hard guy to fit in the first place. They've already tried him with Clarkson. That's had some problems doing everything else. And moving him to a backup role is a problem. Like, you could get into a couple of the Jahlil Okafor problems. And while Russell is a good guy to have on your team, everybody needs players who can handle the ball and who can shoot, it gets really sticky. And the idea that Russell and Clarkson probably are incongruous on the same team, considering you want to play each of them more minutes than to cross them over, and they're not good enough for that. So, you know, like, does that mean that if either regardless or kind of even more so, that they need to consider moving him, moving Clarkson, moving both of them, depending on how this goes?
And of course, there are the interpersonal issues as well. All right, my turn. Mario Hezonja. Just kidding. Oh, just kidding, Danny.
Thank God. You're just starting to go through the guys whose pages I still sponsor on Basketball Reference?
No, I have no idea who any of those people are. I know you sponsored Giannis at one point.
2 years.
Jeff Teague.
I like him. I think that he can be a reliable piece in a successful offense at this point in his career, which is more than we can say for a lot of players. And he's been able to stay on the floor better than George Hill. I still don't think he's a better player than George Hill. But my concern with him, you know, he is, you know, he's listed at 6'2". He is, I always think of him as being thinner than I think he is. I think he's a little more stout. It's just the way I picture him is just when he was a little bit younger. But as somebody who turns 29 right now, I'm happy that if I'm the Pacers, I'm happy he's on my team now. But if he's demanding an extremely lucrative 4-year deal, I start to wonder if the juice is worth the squeeze, even if you can't really replace him with somebody better. And this gets into the idea of figuring out what Paul George is going to do, because paying Jeff Teague is substantially more palatable if you're keeping Paul George. If you're not, if you're going, you know, more in the Miles Turner direction, then I don't think it makes sense to pay Jeff Teague the money that somebody else is going to be willing to pay.
Jeff Teague deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do with his game. I mean, he basically was a shooting guard coming out of Wake Forest, an athletic guy. All he could do was drive to the basket and finish. He's added a really nice floater. He can actually run a team pretty adequately now. You know, what he learned under Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta, I think, it really helped him a lot. And he's become a pretty solid catch and shoot player. You'll recall that last year we were skeptical of his 40% 3-point shooting. And after a really miserable start to the season, he's now shooting 40% on catch and shoot threes and 37% overall. I mean, I still think in a playoff situation, teams might just go under on him and dare them to beat them, but he's actually been able to do that a reasonable amount of the time. So he deserves a lot of credit for his evolution as a player. That said, I agree with you. It really, his next contract is a big part of why I think it's necessary to get the Paul George thing figured out. And then if you don't go with him, I mean, his cap hole is only going to be $12 million. You're not going to be able to get a player as good as him for that $12 million starting next year. I agree his contract is going to be bad. We'll see what happens though in the playoffs this year. But he's probably like between the 15th and 20th best point guard in the league. Adequate. There are some teams that just don't have a solution there that, you know, he could help them. But certainly not a guy who looks to age very well as he gets into his early 30s as kind of an undersized guy, not a great shooter.
And that ties in with something that's been a surprising development a little bit this year, just because they've had more floor spacing, not more floor spacing than he had on the Hawks, obviously, but he is actually shooting the smallest proportion of his shots in the restricted area of his entire career. And he's had a largely varied supporting cast and coaching staff, you know, over his career. He's at 24.5% of his shots in the restricted area, and his previous low was 31.6 way back in 2010-11. And he's making a little bit less, you know, he's at 55 now. He's usually been in a little bit higher than that. And that could just be system change, you know, Nate McMillan, could be a million different things. But if that continues, it takes away a part of his efficiency base moving forward. And we don't know, like, he's been awesome at drawing fouls this year. If that starts to fade off a little bit, even to where he was last year or 2 years ago, then it gets harder for him to score. And he's still a good passer. He'll still do well. But it's kind of, I think it's a part of how he could age that could be problematic.
All right. Well, remember when we were like, oh, this is going to be a short, easy episode on a Monday night. But we still got to talk about this complete evisceration that the Spurs put on the Cavs. I thought my biggest takeaway from here was just how incredibly well San Antonio defended Cleveland in this game.
Danny Green was great. Kawhi Leonard had some bad moments, but often was very, very good. And the gulf in help defense quality between these two teams was jaw-dropping. And Cleveland has been bad at that for a little while now. I mean, LeBron is by far their best help defender, and there are lots of different issues with that, with where you want him on the action. But they're just able to get those plays from different guys. A lot of it is just reading the situation. Danny Green had that amazing help block on LeBron. I think it was in the second quarter.
He had he blocked LeBron twice. He had another block, I think, in transition. I can't remember who was on. And then he had another great verticality play at the rim. I mean, he is just an incredible defensive player at the rim for a guard. And then he also had some great plays where Kyrie Irving tried to go at him one-on-one. Kyrie, probably the best guy in the entire league at just creating a shot one-on-one, and Danny Green just stoned him and made him pass off with no advantage gain. It was really one of the better defensive games we've seen from a guard in quite some time, to the point where Kyrie was like, felt terrible and was like shooting a bunch of jumpers after the game out on the arena floor.
The Spurs also looked good offensively. Some of that is also Cleveland, but they move the ball so well that, and they do it with different lineup combinations. I mean, remember at the beginning of the year, Pau Gasol was starting, Tony Parker still is starting, but they were going with that. Now Deadman starting, but then not really playing as much off the bench. They've gone to this Pau Gasol David Lee combination that moves the ball just absolutely beautifully. And the Spurs are going to get those advantages. And while they're going to have less time against second units once we get into the playoffs, they should be able to run a lot of those minutes, at least against everybody but Houston.
Can I tell you something that will probably make you laugh a little bit, considering they lost this game 103-74? I actually feel better about Cleveland's ultimate destiny after watching this game. And the reason for that is they came out in the third quarter and they actually busted their asses defensively. And they won the quarter 18-17. After they trailed at halftime 64-40. And LeBron James had a couple of really nice instances where he just denied Kawhi Leonard. They had the Spurs out of what they wanted to run. They actually helped effectively at times. They took the Spurs out of their fast break game, actually got back on defense. They actually proved that even for one quarter, they could defend a good offense and they could try hard. And LeBron James actually brought the intensity. Now, of course, it's maddening that, and LeBron, he's not going to be able to guard Kawhi Leonard and, you know, get through every screen and deny him on DHOs. He can't have the energy to do that all game. But, and there's another great play that he had where he knew exactly the out of bounds plays that they were going to run. And so he switched on to the big who is setting the screen so that he could then switch on to, I think it was Manu Ginobili going out in the corner, denied Manu Ginobili and made them throw the ball away out of bounds. And it still bears repeating that LeBron is one of the smartest guys we've ever seen in the NBA. So yeah, they got killed. It's not encouraging, but they've been playing so badly defensively that even just seeing them play at the requisite intensity for one quarter is, I mean, I'm not saying that like, oh yeah, they're going to be fine now, but just showing that they still have that. was an improvement over where they've been.
Absolutely, especially considering they're not going to need to bring it that often to make it out of the East. They are. It's going to be a tougher road than it's been the last few years, assuming they get, you know, at least reasonable injury balance with everything. And they've had some amazing injury luck over the last couple of years, especially in 2015. But they are going to get pushed, and they are going to need to summon this for a fourth quarter a couple times, at least in the second and third round. And it was good to see that they still have something close to their fastball. How much they can do that considering their current personnel is a very, very big question, and part of the reason why I am very skeptical at this point about their prospects in the finals against the best teams in the West. But it's still comforting to see it.
Now, a couple of things to note here. The Cavs went 4 out of 26 on threes, 2 out of 15 in the first half. You know, so if they, and they're down 24, you know, they still would have been down by 15 if they'd made, you know, three more threes for kind of a more normal number. And obviously, this is one of the greatest three-point shooting teams that we've seen. They were completely unable to get to the foul line. That's obviously something that they really rely on. The Spurs, of course, for years and years, have been legendary about not fouling the other team. And then the Spurs were only 7 out of 26 on threes themselves. And although the Spurs attempts, I thought, actually in large part were harder, especially in the second half, than the Cavs were. But this Spurs team, I mean, the defense they played on the Cavs, I mean, yeah, that shooting was bad, but, you know, they played great individual defense on Kyrie. Kawhi is probably the best against LeBron. They were not able to get those switches that they like to get with running the small pick and rolls. Kevin Love, not able to really get going from three. J.R. Smith was 1 out of 6 from three as well. And maybe the game looks a lot different if those guys are hitting their shots. But I mean, considering what, like, I mean, because you would think, for example, I tweeted this a couple of times, like, oh, it's Fry and Love in the game. Like, how the hell are they going to guard these guys? It's Pau Gasol and it's David Lee and it's LaMarcus Aldridge. And those guys actually defended them at the three-point line. And it helps that they don't have to help as much at the rim because Kawhi Leonard is not going to get steamrolled by LeBron James, and Danny Green can stay in front of Kyrie Irving better than a lot of players can. But like, their bigs were pretty good. I mean, Pau Gasol got scored on a few times at the rim, but at least he was there. It's just very impressive performance, and just what Pop is able to get out of these former defensive liabilities as bigs. I mean, I was listening to ESPN Radio, which is always a fine podcast with Amin Haas and Brian Windhorst and Mark Stein, but I got to take issue with the fact that they didn't even mention Greg Popovich in the coach of the year discussion. And considering he's widely considered the best coach in the game, and to get this defensive performance out of this roster is just absolutely, absolutely masterful.
One other point I wanted to mention is that while I thought San Antonio overall did a good job getting back in transition defense, they also out offensive rebounded the Cavs. And while Cleveland really only has Tristan doing that, it's still notable.
Cleveland's
when you think
been
about
bad
trade-off
on the defensive glass, especially with Love out. Although Love was in for a lot of this game, he played 27 minutes. He's been cleared now to play on back-to-backs.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting. There was one in particular where it ended up on a switch. LaMarcus had J.R. Smith on him, and he just basically big-manned him. He grabbed the ball over him and just threw it back in. And those are going to happen, especially on a switch-happy team. But the Spurs being able to get 10 of those in this game and still be as solid as they were most of the game in transition defense is a reminder of their viability in that way.
The other thing we should mention is that as good as the Cavaliers D was in the third quarter when they're already down by 24, it was just so bad. Transition, and the Spurs got 22 fast break points. This is not a team that gets out on the break it any longer. Tony Parker is not that guy anymore. And the Cavaliers had one steal and zero blocks in the first half of play, and overall forced only 2 Spurs turnovers. And that was the big reason why San Antonio was able to be so efficient, running out to 64 points on 47 possessions in that first half.
It's also pretty amazing, Dedmon getting 8 and 13 in just 20 minutes. Like, I think that he will have a limited role in the playoffs, but he can play that limited role well.
All right, are we about done here?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, this was a fun one. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Going to do Gamer, and then also Wednesday, big day, we're going to do Twitter NBA Show Second Screen from our brand new studio, which is actually my office and my apartment for Spurs and Warriors. Looks as of now that both of those teams are going to be playing, so check that out, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, and then we'll, of course, have it dunked on that night with a full wrap-up of the night's action as well. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget about Our sponsor, SeatGeek, use that CapSpace code to get $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Also, thank you for Coca-Cola and Powerade for sponsoring today's show. Do yourself a favor and be ready to watch all the games by picking up a 6-pack of Coca-Cola and an 8-pack of Powerade at Walmart. When you pick up Coca-Cola and Powerade at Walmart, you're always ready for tip-off. Plus, you can get on the NCAA March Madness action by visiting coke.com/alwaysready. NCAA and March Madness are trademarks of the National Collegiate Athletic Association.